The following is a paid program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation and WFED. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individuals or advertisers as indicated. WFED does not endorse or take responsibility for those statements or opinions. Federal News Radio accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracies or errors in admissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Deloitte's Fed Central program on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Here's your host, Jay Norris.
Welcome to Fed Central, brought to you by Deloitte, a program where executives and federal government leaders talk about the issues and initiatives that are making a real impact on the business of government today to help government help America. In today's show, we're going to talk about stop, think, and connect, how you keep your information safe during the holidays. And that's a pretty important topic probably every day of the year, but especially around this time of year when people really are going online with greater frequency. Joining us today for the program is Bruce McConnell. Mr. McConnell is a senior counselor at the Department of Homeland Security who advises on cybersecurity issues and other issues as well. And also joining us is Omri Junedine, principal with Deloitte. He's also the Federal Technology Risk Services Leader. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks, Jane.
Thank you, Jane.
And so first I'll ask you, Bruce, why did you create the Stop, Think, Connect campaign?
So cybersecurity is a priority for the Obama administration. And as you remember, in May last year, the president directed a cyberspace policy review. And one of the short-term recommendations was to create a public awareness campaign and engage the public in the importance of cybersecurity. So it's just that. It's a national effort to educate, engage, and empower the American public to take charge of their safety and security online and to challenge them to be more vigilant about establishing smart habits that will lead to increased protection online for everyone.
Bruce, a great point. And sometimes, though, the American public believes that they don't really need to be engaged in the business of cybersecurity, that somehow cybersecurity is something that large corporations and the American government only need to advocate. Why specifically should the public be engaged and involved in the cybersecurity effort?
Cybersecurity is really a shared responsibility. So everyone has a part to play, individual users, firms and enterprises, or organizations of all sizes for their own networks. The IT industry has a role to play in making better and more secure products, and the government has a role to bring about more awareness and also to enforce the law and create a policy environment and protect its own systems. So we all have a part to play in this, and the internet is such a distributed phenomenon that we have to all participate and make it safer.
And when we talk about the internet, it's broad, it's diverse. There are people from ages 3, 4, 5, all the way through people who are very much older who engage in surfing the net, making purchases online, etc. What do you believe are some of the more risky practices people engage in online that they might not necessarily think are risky as they go about their business?
So you mentioned a couple of different points there, Omri. One is the broad age of folks who are online, and it really encompasses everyone. And so that gets to the focus of our campaign, which is for the first year, teens, ages 13 through 17, young adults 18 through 24, and the parents of teens, because about 93% of teens are online. And so they are among those who engage in some of the more risky behaviors you're talking about. And they're also part of the group that helps older adults and others understand technology. So we think they're a core audience, but them and their parents and young adults are the ones we're focusing on. And it's really about a few simple steps just to practice good online habits, like not visiting suspect websites or downloading attachments or documents from people you don't know or that otherwise look suspicious, and changing your passwords frequently and using difficult ones. There was a recent case where a bunch of data was revealed, and some 20% of the users had used the word password as their password. So, and of course, backing up your computer files regularly and continually updating your antivirus software and the patches that the manufacturers send you.
You know, there were recent cases where people had file sharing software on their equipment at home that allowed their files to be exposed. What do you say about things like that?
So there are a lot of vulnerabilities out there. The system is not built very securely today, and that's why everybody has to be involved and keeping their antivirus and other protections up to date.
On a similar note, portable devices, Bruce, I mean, everybody has the latest gadget, whether it's the Android or the iPhone or something else. And the number of applications that are being developed for these devices is tremendous. There are thousands and perhaps hundreds of thousands of these applications that really enable convenience in our daily life. Just to give you an example, there's a program that basically allows a person driving to have their emails and their text messages read to them. So extraordinarily convenient. The problem is some of those programs might take the contents of that voicemail or text message and cache it on an unencrypted ClearText Google Cloud, right? Or some other kind of cloud. So tremendous risk. But when people are looking at convenience more than security and risk management, all of a sudden, they might actually be compromised. Any comments on things like that?
Well, as you suggest, Amri, it's a dynamic threat environment. But as Secretary Napolitano said recently, we really have to build a national culture that provides users at every level what they need to know to help us create better security and have greater confidence in the security of the system. So that's what we're trying to do in the campaign. It's one piece, and it's directed primarily at individual users, but the companies are participating. So we have a broad coalition of companies who are working with us to promote Stop, Think, Connect and to spread the word that people should become friends of the campaign and participate in our online public service announcement challenge and that kind of thing. The companies are also, of course, working to improve the security of their products, and that's another piece of it.
Talk about the public service announcement campaign for a minute. What would you like people to do?
So the public service announcement, the PSA challenge, was launched in November 8 at a campaign forum that we held at Carnegie Mellon University and was also announced by Howard Schmidt, the White House cybersecurity coordinator, in an introductory video, which you can see on the Stop, Think, Connect website, www.dhs.gov/stopthinkconnect. It builds on a previous challenge that we did earlier this year and actually calls the public to generate online PSAs for communications about the Stop, Think, Connect campaign. So it's 30 to 60 seconds of 30 or 60 seconds of video. You have until February 14th, Valentine's Day, to take part of the challenge. And basically the idea is you have to use the words Stop, Think, Connect, and you have to use at least one of the handy tips that we have about things that we were just talking about things that you need to do to stay safe online.
Bruce, you also previously raised a very important point about changing the culture of America and all of our citizens to ultimately be cyber savvy, for this to be very intuitive and very simple, for people to truly understand the risks. What are some signs that will tell us that America is a little bit more cyber savvy and cyber aware, i.e. the culture has changed?
As part of the campaign, we are collecting baseline data to understand how aware people are. So one of the things that's important to us is to measure our effectiveness and to, as this campaign goes along, and to redirect our efforts in ways that seem to be more successful. So I think we'll have some, we don't have the data yet, but we are going to be able to measure how much people are aware of it and how much better they're doing.
And when you say how much better they're doing, can we track the kinds of phishing scams and other kinds of activities that people actually engage in, or do we even know that level of statistic?
A lot of that is not known. In other words, a lot of that happens to individuals and they don't report it. And so we're focused in the campaign, of course, on awareness because we think if people have a better awareness of what they should and should not be doing, that they'll be safer from those kinds of attacks.
Bruce, you mentioned earlier about the various demographics that we target as a part of our cybersecurity campaign. So teens and parents and the elderly, et cetera. Obviously, there is a huge part to play by teenagers who basically learn safe internet practices and basically promulgate their knowledge to the youngsters and also to their parents and grandparents. On the flip side, what can parents do to teach their children about internet and online safety?
So I think you mentioned something, one aspect of this earlier, Omri, which is that sometimes the teenagers don't think about the kinds of information they're posting online and what some of the risks are. And I think that's a place where the parents need to become involved and give them some guidance about what kind of activities are appropriate. And as we say, what happens on the internet stays on the internet for a long, long time.
Fantastic. And in terms of education of our kids, in terms of online safety and security, what age should this begin?
So I think it's similar to what we say about security products, right? We say that security has to be built in, not added on. And so I think this, just like looking both ways when you cross the street, it really needs to be taught as simply as part of using the computer, not something you think about afterwards. I mean, kids, we're focused on teens, but as we all know, kids are on the internet now at younger and younger ages, and it's got to be part of the culture, as you say.
Absolutely. And do you believe that kids are beginning to recognize the importance of online security and safety?
We are getting a lot of positive response from our conversations at colleges, and we're also working with the DARE which is a teenage group that is going to be helping us reach out to teens. So I think we're getting a lot of uptake. I think there is some dawning awareness on this, yes.
All right, we're going to come back and talk more about this with Bruce McConnell. He is a counselor at the Department of Homeland Security who advises on cybersecurity. And Omri Junedine, principal with Deloitte and Federal Technology Risk Services leader in just a moment. You're listening to Fed Central presented by Deloitte on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jane Norris.
On January 19th, Deloitte will host the second in a series of executive forums on the topic of international financial crime. This event will look at the changing face of drug trafficking and the movement of illicit money in Latin America and will feature Douglas Farah, former correspondent and investigative journalist for The Washington Post and published expert of financial crime in Latin America. Space is limited. Please register at Deloitte.com/US/financial crime.
Welcome back to Fed Central, presented by Deloitte on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We're talking today about the Department of Homeland Security's Stop, Think, and Connect program and how you keep your information safe online during the holidays and every day of the year, actually. We're talking today to Bruce McConnell, senior counselor at the Department of Homeland Security, who advises on cybersecurity issues, and also Omri Junedine, principal with Deloitte, and he's the Federal Technology Risk Services leader. So I want to pick up on the point where you left off, Bruce, and talk a little bit about kids and how they are learning their safe online practices. Are they learning this in school?
To some extent, yeah. I think it's coming along. We're working as part of a larger initiative called the NICE initiative, which is cuts across the administration. And one big piece of that is a K-12 curriculum development and materials development. So the Federal Trade Commission, for example, has come up with a number of products which can be used by schools. And so I think that is starting to roll out, and we expect to continue to work through the schools as much as possible. The Education Department is a big partner with us in this area.
In addition to that, Bruce, I know that you're aware of many other organizations who've actually taken and adopted a variety of different variations, I guess, of the campaign. So, for example, the Center for Missing and Exploited Children of America, they basically have a program called NetSmarts, and their tagline is online safety and education to educate, engage, and empower children across America to be safe online against predators, etc. And they also have a kit that they basically push out to public education and private education systems so that people can host internet safety awareness sessions at a certain point in time during the course of the year. So I think that force multiplier effect that you've been talking about in terms of other people adopting variations of campaigns, et cetera, is, I believe, working pretty well here in America.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's exactly what you're talking about, that this is something that has to go viral in order to be effective. Is that the reason why you think the public service campaign coming from the public would be a more effective driver than, say, coming from the Department of Homeland Security itself?
We're looking for some very cool PSAs to come up on through YouTube as this goes forward. So, yes.
So you think kids have a little more, a better handle on how to reach other kids than adults do? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. And that's why we're going to be working, for example, with the DARE Youth Advisory Board and other groups to bring the kids involved directly into the campaign.
Wonderful. So this is the holiday season. Every year that goes by, the number of people who use the internet for shopping increases fairly dramatically. And so when people across the board are going online to a variety of different, some reputable and some questionable websites to make their holiday shopping purchases, what specific things that people, the average lay user, can look for online, Bruce, to make sure that the sites that they're visiting are safe and secure?
So there's a couple things there. Some of the browsers do have safe site features, and so it's always good to pay attention to those. But you also need to pay attention to the site once you get there. I read a statistic that over 50,000 new fake websites are developed every week to try to dupe users into conveying personal information or to infect their computers with malware. And that's not mentioning the kinds of sites that are selling or purportedly selling copyrighted or trademark goods that are not real. Here at the Department of Homeland Security, we recently seized several dozen websites that were selling counterfeit goods, and consumers were buying stuff that when it showed up, if it did at all, was not at all what they expected to get. So I think there's still a situation today where people need to pay attention and remember never to share their Social Security number, bank account numbers, and passwords with sites that they don't can't verify or don't trust. I mean, you really have to ask yourself, who is asking for this? What are they asking for, and why do they need it?
And also, if an offer on the internet sounds too good to be true, it probably is. So that's something else to watch out for as well. Oftentimes, we also have kind of the bait and switch efforts that we see online, where somebody might be taken to a website expecting something, only to find that they're actually presented with something else. Those are some other things that our public can look for as they do their shopping online. So the concept of having your identity stolen is something that has been in the news quite a bit as well, and we've heard of many different types of data breaches where people's personal information has been compromised by one website or another. So, Bruce, if a holiday shopper or anybody else for that matter learns that their identity has been compromised, what are some things they can do to recover from that?
Well, that's a long process, as anyone of our listeners knows who's gone through that process. So, I mean, you have to obviously immediately connect with your credit card companies and that kind of thing and let them know about this. But getting your identity back is arduous. So the key thing is to protect it as much as you can and pay attention. So watch your credit card bills and things like that to keep your eye on things and so you know about it if it does happen.
Right. Really just have to pay attention to your bank account, especially if you're banking online, and make sure that everything is as it's supposed to be. But are there authentication tools in place for the average user to know whether or not they've reached a good, safe, and secure site?
So I think it's there's no one-size-fits-all tool that takes care of that. I think that the better antivirus and other products and the software patches provide you with some protection in that. The safe surfing features of some browsers also do that. Changing your passwords regularly, all the kind of main tips that we that we use. You know, there is the little padlock down at the bottom of the web browser that shows that you're, you know, in a secure connection. So that's a good thing to watch for.
Yeah, absolutely, Bruce. And some of the other things that we can look for, Jane, include the type of transaction you're conducting. So if you're on a online banking environment, and if you're basically transacting a cash transfer, you would expect that the bank would actually have a level of authentication that's actually at a higher level of sophistication. So the old paradigm password and, you know, user ID and password, even if it's a strong password, might not really be good enough. There are various ways in which a bank can provide those protections. So, for example, they might be able to identify your device, your IP address. They might be able to do things that will enable you to say, yes, there's a specific secret image that I blessed at the beginning of the process of signing up with this bank that gets displayed on my computer that shows me that it is this bank that I'm transacting with. So there are many ways based on the risk level of the transaction that can be used to figure out if you're safe.
You know, Amri, I think that's exactly right. And it goes back to the theme of this conversation, which is that anytime you're online, you need to stop and think before you connect. And so what we've just been talking about a little bit is what are some of the things that you need to think about, and that's very good. But the general awareness that is just stay alert and follow these basic tips is the key thing. I think with this also, it's an opportunity for those of us who care about this, may be involved in the IT industry in the Washington area and that kind of thing, to really do their part in participating. If you don't feel like you want to participate in the PSA challenge, you know, certainly you should become a friend of the campaign. You can participate or sponsor Cyber Citizen forums. You can become a member of the Cyber Awareness Coalition, which is open to any public or private sector organization at no cost, and you can get materials and templates and resources and tips to promote cybersecurity within your community or within your company or within your constituency of any kind. So you can get information about all this, these opportunities to participate and really spread the word at www.dhs.gov/stopthinkconnect.
Bruce, ultimately, what this boils down to is people having a high degree of vigilance, knowing some simple things that they can do to protect themselves. Simplicity actually is a key as well. Even when you look at the campaign that DHS has launched, it's simple, it's intuitive. Are you getting any feedback from the public or from other stakeholders about the campaign, the perceived success of it, and what else we can do to improve on what we have right now?
So it's in the early stages, but everyone we're talking about is excited. We have over 2,500 friends of the campaign as of today. We have more than 10,000 hits to the website. So just even in the first month here, we're off to a good start. And it's we've had really good uptake in the half a dozen or so public sessions we've had since we announced the campaign at the beginning of October. And I think we're really building momentum.
Well, Mr. McConnell, I thank you for joining us today. We look forward to talking with you again to see how much progress you've made in this area.
That'll be great, Jane.
All right. Thanks so much. And, of course, today we've been talking about Stop, Think, and Connect with the Department of Homeland Security and Bruce McConnell. He is a senior counselor at the Department of Homeland Security who advises on cybersecurity and other issues, and Amri Junaidin, principal with Deloitte. He's also the Federal Technology Risk Services leader. I'm Jane Norris. Thanks so much for being here today. And you're listening to Fed Central, presented by Deloitte on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This has been Fed Central on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, with Jane Norris, your host. Make sure to tune in again in 2 weeks for another edition of Fed Central on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and on federalnewsradio.com/fedcentral.